Welcome to Season 3 of Fit to Be Radio. The goal of this season is to dive deep into real-life fitness applications, exploring how exercise and core strength play out in situations we all face every day. You should know that Fit to Be Radio is a production of Fit to Be Studio, an online family-friendly workout portal which specializes in home workouts and e-courses for postpartum women of all ages. So hey, strap on your sneakers and take us for a walk while we talk, or just grab your favorite drink and get on the floor and stretch while you enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to Fit to Be Radio. My name is Chris. I'll be hosting this podcast. I've got with me, like usual, Beth Learn. Beth, how are you doing?
Awesome. So excited for today.
So excited for today because we also have with us Sheila Gregoire, not Gregory, but really it's Gregoire, right? That's what we were talking about.
Yes, it's that French-Canadian thing there.
Perfect. Well, I'm just going to do Gregoire because that I can handle that. I can do that. So we've got Sheila with us. She has written several books, but the one that kind of connected us is called The Great Sex Rescue. So I'm super excited to dig into that a little bit. And normally I say, Beth, how do you know the guest? Hold on. Before we do that, Sheila, where are you coming from?
Well, right now I'm in Florida because I'm speaking down here, but I am not from Florida. I am from the Great White North, so halfway between Toronto and Ottawa.
So I'm
Canadian, eh?
Mm-hmm. Perfect. But you're gracious enough to do this podcast from your beautiful Airbnb, which has seemingly wonderful internet because you look amazing. So thank you for doing that, and that's kind of cool. I mean, it's amazing we can actually connect with people from all over the world. So thank you for taking some time with us today. Beth is on the other end of the United States in Battleground, Washington, and I'm just right below that in Central Oregon. So it's awesome we can connect like this. Okay, so how we're all connected is, and there's even more to the story I didn't know about. So I'll let Beth, you jump into that in a second. But I got connected to Sheila. I didn't really get connected, but I heard about the book because somebody actually posted it in the Fit to Be forum, a link to it. And then my wife took a screenshot, said, oh, that sounds interesting. So she took a screenshot. And then we teach a marriage workshop. And in the marriage workshop, my wife and I were talking about the lesson that we have on sex and intimacy. And she's like, oh, there's this book that looks kind of interesting. And so I bought the book and read it in one day. And it was just amazing. Super awesome. I know we'll talk about that a little bit today, probably. But then we were having coffee with Pete and Beth, and it came up again because the connection actually was from Fit to Be originally. And then Beth started following you on Instagram, and now we're on the Zoom call while you're speaking in Florida, and here we are. So Beth, actually, there's more to the story, right?
Yeah. I mean, I have been friends with Chris's wife, Alice, since we were kids growing up in church together. And that's how Chris and I connected for creating Fit to Be, is basically we're kind of all family too, because my husband is Alice's cousin. For those of you that don't know the whole inside scoop, this is truly
now
family.
You do.
Right? So, I mean, it's just so cool because, you know, my friend became my family. And it was after a filming in Bend, Oregon. We're sitting at a coffee shop. And, you know, as friends do, we were all chit-chatting about life and marriage and some of our struggles, you know, not getting too unkosher, of course, but just like, yeah, this is, man, just the connections between like religion and our marriages. And Chris and Alice were like, well, have you read that book that was recommended in your own forum? And I was like, no. And Chris was like, you need to. So I got it on Audible, and it's a 4-hour drive home. So I listened to half of it on my drive home that day.
And that's my voice too. I narrate The Great Sex Rescue. So you were listening to me.
Yeah. I was.
Nice job.
And I was so completely blown out of the water by how many things resonated with me, some of my own intimacy issues, things my husband and I have struggled with. And then also the research that they present from surveying thousands and thousands of women, and how that lines up with what I know about the pelvic floor and the core and painful intimacy. And that's when I first was like, man, it'd be so great to get this gal on our podcast, but she's too big. That'll never happen. But oh my gosh, that'd be so great. But that's not going to happen. But then I started following her and my husband got the book. My husband actually bought two copies, one for each of us. And if you have not read this book and you've ever struggled with intimacy of any type, and especially if you have a religious background, I would strongly encourage you. We're going to lean into that today. I would encourage you to get this book because it really transformed so many aspects of my married life as we faced down taboos that we were taught. So that's where we're going today. If you're not a person of faith, like, this may not resonate with you as much, but the research that Sheila has done will resonate. It is very, very applicable and mind-blowing.
Yeah. And actually, the connection goes even farther back, right, Sheila? Because didn't you say in the pre-show that you even were familiar with Fit to Be and did some of the workouts in the past?
Oh, yeah. Like, when Beth reached out to me to be on the podcast, I'm like, oh, yeah, we know each other. Like, I didn't realize you were fangirling. But, you know, because I've been writing about marriage and sex for years. My first big book, The Good Girl's Guide to Great Sex, was out in 2012. I've rewritten it since then. But I started talking about vaginismus, which no book had talked about really until then, especially in the Christian world. But, you know, even in the secular world, it's a very hush-hush topic. It's getting more attention now, thank goodness. But people just didn't know about it, which I find unreal, because everyone knows what erectile dysfunction is. And among couples under the age of 40, vaginismus is like, what, five times more common, six times more common, but no one talks about it. It's just unreal. Anyway, so I'm blogging and I'm trying to find resources for people. And I knew that Fit to Be, that you guys talked a lot about vaginismus. And so I had been recommending you guys. I was an affiliate for you. So when you reached out to me, I thought, oh yeah, Beth knows who I am.
So then this morning before the show, she's like, oh yeah, and I've done your workouts. And I was like, I feel
small
so
world.
Seen.
Small world. That's so cool. That's so cool. I love it. I love the connections. I'm so glad that we're spending some time today. And I want to connect. Well, actually, I'm going to let you guys connect the dots because typically we talk about all kinds of different topics, and we're always tying them into pelvic floor, core health, and women's health and fitness and things like this. Obviously, that's our main set of topics. So, can you guys tie this in for me as we're kind of getting this thing, you know, off the ground? And then before we do that real quick, I just want to say this. So this, The Great Sex Rescue is written from a Christian perspective. I think it's absolutely applicable to people that aren't of the Christian faith, because in a lot of cultures, there's still some strange taboos about all of this. It's full of real research about real medical issues. So don't let any of that topic like stop you from paying attention to these resources or this podcast. Like, I think it's applicable to pretty much everyone, men as well, if they're, you know, connected to women in some way. Like, it's so applicable. So I just want to kind of put that out there. Don't hear something and then, oh, this isn't for me, turn it off. Like, this is super important, super applicable. So with that little qualifier, connect for us. I don't care who goes first. Why don't you guys just jump in? Connect for us kind of this topic with the fitness side and why it's so important.
Yeah, well, let me just tell you about the research that we did and why we did it. So I had vaginismus when I was first married. It was terrible. And I had no idea that sex could hurt. No one had ever told me that it could hurt. And months later, sex was still extremely painful. I was marched off to this gray-haired gynecologist who told me that he was just going to touch me everywhere until I felt comfortable and so that I could say all the words while my husband watched. And I am so proud of little 21-year-old me for running out of the office. But I did. And there just wasn't help available then. And I, like I said, I've been blogging about sex and marriage for years. And I had been trying to talk about how to have healthy sex and marriage. But one thing that I really hadn't done was read the other resources, specifically in the evangelical world, about sex and marriage, because I was afraid of plagiarizing. And one day, it was January 2019, I had a migraine. I was trying to procrastinate, and I got into this Twitter fight with someone about a book called Love and Respect, which is one of the main Christian resources about marriage. And I thought, I have that book. This is a great way to procrastinate. I will go read it. And so I got it down. I turned to the sex chapter and I read, to my horror, if your husband is typical, he has a need you don't have. Mm-hmm. So men need sex and women don't. And the need is for physical release. It's not for intimacy. It's not for emotional connection. It's just physical release. And why would you deprive him of something which takes so little time? That one made me laugh. And if you do deprive him, he's likely to have an affair. And that's basically the entire message about sex from this book. And I call that my nuclear bomb moment, because it felt like a nuclear bomb went off in my living room, because it changed everything about what we did. Because I realized it's not enough just to give healthy information. We need to figure out how stuff gets messed up in the first place, because our foundation is rotten. At the time, my oldest daughter was working with me. She's a psychometrics grad, so she knows a lot about survey development. I also had another young woman who was working with me, who has a master's. She's a statistician, master's in epidemiology, but she had just had a baby, and so she was home. And we got talking about this, and we just decided that we would do the largest research project that's ever been done on evangelical women to see if certain teachings actually impact marital and sexual satisfaction. And we had three big outcome variables. That sounds like a very technical term, but it's easy to understand. We had three big ways we were going to see if teachings hurt. One was, did it hurt marital satisfaction? One was orgasm rates and sexual satisfaction. And one was sexual pain or vaginismus. Because we know, like this has been in the literature, that religiously conservative women suffer from vaginismus at twice the rate of the general population. So there is something about our teachings which is wrecking our pelvic floor. And we wanted to figure out what it was. Because in the literature, they don't talk about it. All they say is that it's about sexual shame. And I didn't think that was the only issue. I thought it went deeper than that. And so we had sexual pain as one of our outcome variables. And because of that, we were able to figure out which teachings hurt women's pelvic floor. Just by believing this, it actually affects your body. And that's what we did. Wow. We found an incidence rate of 22.6% of primary vaginismus, and I think about 32% of sexual pain overall, because people can have, you know, postpartum pain, which also needs to be dealt with. You can have secondary vaginismus. You can have vulvodynia. You can have lichen sclerosis, other things that can lead to sexual pain, endometriosis. But yeah, an overall incidence rate of about 32%.
As a direct result of the things that we're taught.
Yeah, I mean, some of it's postpartum, but certainly 23%, that is largely about that, because our rate is around, is 2 to 3 times that of the general population.
So that is so powerful for a couple of reasons. I mean, many, many reasons, which, you know, you guys can dig into if you want to, but I just want to make a couple of thoughts super quick that just kind of popped out as you were saying that. First of all, what we think is super powerfully affects our whole body, even the physical part of our body. Like, that's how powerful our brains are. And that's scriptural as well. So I feel like that's really important to pay attention to, because what you said, Sheila, was something in the teaching was causing this thing that is like a physical manifestation of like this teaching. So I think that's really important to pay attention. So like, our thought patterns are super relevant to all of our physical health. And I think that's amazing. And then the other thing that kind of stood out was the statistics and the numbers are quite shocking. And one of the things I want to mention about this book is it's just absolutely jam-packed with the numbers and statistics and research from this huge research project that you referenced. And so this isn't just like Sheila's personal experience. Mm-hmm. It is like the personal experience, kind of what I'm hearing is that was like catapulted you into the realization of how important it was to do all of this deep research to find out what really the truth is. And that's what's kind of comes out in this book. And I love that. And I think, you know, it's super important to us at Fit to Be as well. Beth, I'll let you speak to this, but like, there's just a lack of research out there with a lot of these women's health issues. And I don't understand it. Like, women make up half the population. So like, I don't know. It seems like there should be more research and more resources available to this, but this isn't uncommon. Like, we find this with a lot of the things that we dig into on this podcast, that there's just not the resources available. So anyway, that's just like like, I just feel like it's important to kind of note that stuff. But what do you think about that?
Well, as Sheila said, it is so many facets. There are so many facets to this. And I do believe that in the evangelical world, it is a lot about the teachings. It's being reinforced in marriage books and marriage seminars. And I love how she dissects all of it in her book. And I hope that we'll take time to dissect a little bit of it more, just like you just did with that love and respect thing. But I also think that we women do it to ourselves. Mm-hmm. I think women hurt women. We are responsible for what we're teaching the next generation. And I believe that past generations have done their best. But sometimes our best is not good enough. And if we want our next generation of daughters to have deep, meaningful intimacy that they enjoy in their marriages, we have to start talking about this differently. And we have to go upstream and figure out where people are falling into this river of nonsense, not just sit downstream and try to pull them out. We have to go to the source.
You know, it's funny because we have a new book coming out in April called She Deserves Better, which is based on another survey. So Great Sex Rescue, we surveyed 20,000 women for She Deserves Better. We surveyed 7,000 looking at their experiences as teenagers, specifically in the church. And we use that exact metaphor because we need to start going up the river and getting people before they fall in. So because that's really what it's about is we need to put an end to stuff that's toxic. And what's happened, I think, is that we have allowed people to teach based on, yeah, their opinions, what they want to be true, but we've never measured it. And what we're asking is, hey, let's just raise the bar a bit. Let's actually put this stuff to the test. If it is true, it can withstand scrutiny. And yet, when we start to look at what this actually teaches, we see that, oh, shoot, this is hurting people. And so we need to stop. And I'm not saying that Christianity hurts people. I'm not saying God hurts people. I am saying that people have said that God commands certain things that I don't believe God ever commanded. And we can tell, I think we can tell it's not from God just by looking at the fruit. All you got to do is look at the fruit. And when people teach this stuff, bad stuff happens.
Yeah.
I think you had a really good post. Yeah. You had a really good post the other day in your series where you put up a quote from a popular book, various popular books, and then you fix it. And I love it. Those are my absolute favorites, where you take some quote from some popular Christian marriage sex author, and then you like cross out words and put in different words. And it just makes me so happy. but there was one that you highlighted. I'm struggling to remember exactly what it was right now. I should have had this ready. Where you highlighted how one author had taken apart a piece of scripture and had left out parts of that scripture.
Yes.
Do you remember what that was? And can you actually discuss that specific thing right now?
Yeah. So Emerson Eggerich, the author of Love and Respect, is arguing that men need unconditional respect and that the Bible commands women, wives, to give unconditional respect to their husbands. So no matter how he's acting, and he actually says in the book, if he's drinking or straying, he has examples of men who have been physically abusive. No matter what, we need to give them unconditional respect. And Eggerich's definition of respect is giving them hierarchy, making them the authority in the marriage, giving them sex on demand, listening to their insight rather than yours, like these, and these things must be unconditional. And the way that he proves this is by taking a verse, and I'm not gonna be able to do this off the top of my head, but I'll tell you the gist of what he did. He took a verse, he took two verses. I think it was 1 Peter 2:17-18 or 3:17-18. I don't know, but the verse goes, show proper respect to everyone, honor the emperor, love each other, slaves, you know, respect your masters, not just when they are good, but also when they are harsh. So those are the verses roughly, and I'm messing it up. He took the entire middle part out And he said something like, show respect to everyone, even to those who are harsh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's First Peter 2:17. Yeah.
Yeah. The harsh thing referred was a command given to slaves. It had nothing to do with the respect, but he took the entire middle part out. And this is what we have been doing is too often the evangelical church has been giving messages where women are told you don't matter. No matter how you are treated, you have to take it. Because God's desire for you is that you lay down your life and you become unimportant because your husband must take priority. That is what we have been told. Now, maybe not in those words necessarily, but that's the message we've been giving.
The underlying message. The underlying message. Yeah.
And let me give you an example. When we studied which evangelical teachings hurt sex and marriage, you know, we threw a whole bunch. We threw everything at the wall to see what would stick. Okay, so we threw all kinds of teachings, some that we thought were good, some that we thought were bad, and we identified six big ones that really messed everything up. We dealt with four of them in The Great Sex Rescue. We dealt with another couple, and She Deserves Better. But the one that was the worst, the one that hurt the most, was this one. A wife is obligated to give her husband sex when he wants it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when women enter marriage with that belief that you are obligated to give him sex, your chance of experiencing vaginismus increases to almost the same statistical effect as if you had been abused.
Wow.
And here's why. There's only a 0.1% difference between the two confidence intervals for anyone who knows anything about stats. So it's almost statistically the same, okay? What this is saying is that our bodies interpret the obligation sex message as trauma.
Hmm.
Because both obligation sex and abuse say to a woman, you don't matter. He has the right to use you however and whenever he wants. And our bodies say no, even if our minds aren't saying no, even if we're saying, well, I guess that's true. I need to prioritize sex. Our bodies are like, this is not safe. Right. I am not safe. And we go into fight, flight, or freeze mode. And we literally, it has an effect on how our pelvic floor holds its muscles.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not intentional. I want people to understand this. This is not intentional. She isn't causing this.
Right.
But this is the effect of the message because it makes her feel unsafe. And even if her husband is a safe dude, even if he's a really good guy, it's like, it's the message that's hurting her. Right. It's the message of what we've been taught.
Yeah. I experienced that. My husband is the sweetest. He is a wonderful lover. We'll just put that out there. Great. All right. But I kept wondering, like, what is my issue on my end? Like, why am I locking down? And Chris asked earlier, like, what's the fitness component? This might seem like a strange time, but I don't think it is to dive into that just a smidge, because when you are locked down and you've had a bad sexual experience that you think is supposed to be good, but it's not, and you're really in your head and you're struggling and you don't feel like you matter, and you're trying, you have a good husband, or maybe you even don't. Either way, it turned into just kind of a weird, awful, difficult encounter. And then the next day, you know you need to work out. That's going to be hard.
Yeah.
It's going to be, because, you know, the thing is, whenever we work out, we have to use that part of us. And pain in intimacy also translates to pain during fitness. And the two go back and forth. And you're going to have disconnect. You have to disconnect in order to push through a sexual experience that you're not enjoying. And the same thing happens in fitness. And now you've got disconnect happening on another level. And now you're hating fitness and you're hating intimacy. And now two experiences that are supposed to be enjoyable, truly. Fitness is supposed to be enjoyable. Be like, what?
Yeah.
And sex is supposed to be enjoyable. Moving our bodies, using our bodies the way God designed us to use them, is supposed to be enjoyable, not painful. But now we're pushing ourselves through this. If I don't matter in sex, I certainly don't matter during fitness. I'm just going to take my frustrations out, or I'm just going to push myself. Now you're still self-harming on a whole different level. Sheila, what are your thoughts on that? I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, exactly. And what we really found is that one of the central components of sexual pain is not feeling like you have autonomy. It's feeling like your body is not your own. And we can get into the whole thing. Well, he owns her body and she owns his, and we're supposed to own each other. But that's not God's design. It's not that we own each other. We still have autonomy, but we choose to participate. Like sex is a wonderful part of a healthy relationship, but sex can't fix a bad relationship.
Right.
And sex cannot create a good one on its own. And the problem often is that we see sex in terms of just intercourse. So, you know, as long as we're having intercourse, we're therefore having sex. And I don't actually believe that. I think sex is something which is supposed to be mutual. It's supposed to be intimate, and it's supposed to be pleasurable for both. And there's a lot of women who are having a lot of intercourse that is really painful. They never orgasm. They're not enjoying it. And they think, well, at least I'm having sex. It's like, no, honey, you are being deprived. You are being so deprived. But when we feel like we don't have autonomy, we can often push ourselves and push our bodies in fitness. We can punish ourselves in self-harm, like you said. Yeah. And what we have found, what other studies have found, is that the route forward is to regain autonomy over our bodies and realize that I actually can, like, if you're going to get over vaginismus, we have to learn how to control our own pelvic floors. You know, we have to learn not to be disconnected from our bodies, but to see ourselves as a total being. And so often we, in fitness, our motivation is to punish ourselves because we're bad. Right. Instead of seeing, no, wait, my body is a part of me.
Right.
My body is good.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not that I have to do this. It's that I get to do this.
Yes.
Right. Come on.
And that's a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tie in. So there's like this response. There's this physical responses to mental situations that happen. Right. So like, so as you guys are both talking about this, what I know from my own research, and also you talk about this in the book, but this kind of, when you attach sex, fitness, or the lack to shame, then your body's now programmed to experience shame mentally when you interact with those physical things. So this is a very powerful thing about the brain. I'd love to hear what you think, but like, so there's this weird example just popped into my head. So whenever I travel to a new city, I like to run in that city. And when I travel to a new city and I run in that city, I like to pick a new song that I don't normally run to. Right. And then what happens is years later, when you hear that song, you think about that experience. It's like super powerful, right? So talk about how powerful, when we do a association with these things that links us to shame, how powerful in a bad way that is. Just like in a good way, oh, I hear this song from Coldplay, now I think about running in the city, like, or whatever. Right. Tie those together because it's super powerful.
Yeah. Well, let me give you a preview from our book that's coming out in April, She Deserves Better. So in The Great Sex Rescue, we looked at what beliefs women might have about sex and marriage, entering marriage, that impact vaginismus. And the obligation sex message was the biggest one. A wife should have sex to keep her husband from watching pornography was another big one. You know, so these things, having sex under threat is always bad. But there were other messages that women are giving even earlier that also increase the chance of vaginismus. And those primarily are our modesty messages. So when we tell girls, you need to cover up to keep boys from sinning. You need to be careful because you're a stumbling block.
Yeah.
When my daughter was 11, she was starting to develop, and her Sunday school teacher took her aside one day and told her she was going to have to watch what she wore to church and not wear any more V-necks because she didn't want, you know, the men to be looking at her. She was 11.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. If there are men looking at an 11-year-old girl, the 11-year-old girl is not the problem. But it was terrible. And yet these are the messages the girls are given. And we found that being given those messages, that your body is somehow a threat to men, that your body is going to cause a man to do something bad or is going to put you in harm's way. Because, you know, if you can cause him to lust and make him get out of control, Which again is what our resources have been teaching us. The Secret Keeper Girl curriculum given to 8 to 12 year old girls taught girls that their bellies were intoxicating to grown men, which means that men lose control. So you need to cover up your belly, saying to an 8 year old girl. So if we are telling little girls this, they learn my body is bad and my body puts me in an unsafe situation. Mm-hmm. And so how in the world are you supposed to embrace your body? What you're going to want to do is just disconnect from your body altogether.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then it's very difficult, you know, just to learn mindfulness techniques, to learn, you know, all those wonderful things that we learn in fitness is how to become a whole person, an integrated whole person again. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Beth, you've got some... Your wheels, I almost hear them through the internet.
Oh man. You know, we have a course called Fit to Be Girls. And Chris's wife, Alice, actually wrote and produced the lesson on fashion. And as we did that, you know, which was an interest of a lot of young girls, we wanted to talk about modesty, but not make it about boys. That's the whole crux of Fit to Be Girls, mm-hmm. is educating girls about their bodies without making it about boys or birth control, without making the choices revolve around Uncle John or that weird cousin Bob or a boyfriend, right? Yeah. Because it creates fear, and it's actually not a good motivating factor, because once that factor is removed, it's not going to be there to motivate anymore.
Yeah.
So right. It's like if we're teaching our daughters to cover up because of weird Uncle Bob. I got my names mixed up. If Uncle Bob's not there, well, then you can wear whatever you want. No. So like mm-hmm. we spent a lot of time talking about how do we approach choosing attire that is appropriate for various occasions that has nothing to do with fear-based teaching or boy or men-based mm-hmm. decision-making. And that really changed the narrative. And it was fun to do that. We did a lot of editing. We did a lot of discussing. And I am really pleased with what we came up with because, you know, whether or not you wear a swimsuit is really based on the weather. And it based on, are you going to the beach or are you going to church? You're not going to wear a swimsuit to church.
Well, and also, are you going to be doing lots of diving? Is this a swim lesson? You know, because you shouldn't be wearing a bikini there, you know, not because of modesty issues, but just because you can't dive in a bikini. Like there's just, what mm-hmm. are you going to be doing and where?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it changes why we do what we do. And also for young girls, right? There will be a time and place. There is a time and place to have discussions about who you're around. There's a time and place to discuss our body's sexuality and the magnetism that we have as women, right?
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty amazing how God made us. I don't understand. Yeah. I don't get it. But my husband gets it, and that's what matters. But is it for a young girl who we're trying to prepare to handle her period and handle, you know, staying in shape and eating well? Is that the time to be making her scared of her body? No.
Yeah.
Right? So like you say, dealing with this way in advance in healthy ways that don't engender fear is so important.
And I think it's important to demystify it, to villainize it, because like no one would think it's weird to teach young boys, hey, if you're going to a really important business meeting on the East Coast, you should wear a suit, but if you're going to play basketball with your friends, you should wear gym clothes. Like like what you really teach them, actually, because they know about basketball, is what's important to wear to a wedding or a funeral or a job interview or whatever, right? Like that would be very normal to teach. Yeah. But then as soon as we talk about some of these other things, suddenly they're like villainized and weird. Why is that weird? Like it's totally...
Yeah.
It's not weird. Why is
but
it weird?
We live in a context where women's bodies have been seen as threats to men. And so almost all of our conversations around women's bodies are going into how to control, either control them ourselves, control other women because we see other women as threats to our husbands, you know, whatever it might be. And so it's all about control, and it's just hurt. You know, another intersection between our work that we did with Great Sex Rescue and fitness is that so many studies have found that the more you get control of your core, like the more you really work on core health, the more that you integrate mind, body, you know, fitness, mindfulness, all these techniques, right? The easier sexual arousal and pleasure are. Because, you know, we're looking at a 47-point orgasm gap. That's something else that we found, by which we mean that 95% of men almost always or always reach orgasm in a given sexual encounter. And the equivalent number for women is only 48%. So we got a 47-point gap, people. Like, this is huge. There's a lot of women who are thinking, what is all the fuss about? And if that's you, I just want you to know you're not broken. Like, yeah. You are not broken. If you don't enjoy sex, this could be a very normal thing because most women at some point don't. And a lot of couples have never figured out how to make sex feel good because we think that her body should respond just like his. And right. There are some basic anatomical differences in how we reach orgasm. But we do know that the more that women learn, you know, how to get in touch with their pelvic floor, the actual like blood flow increases. Like it's actually physiologically easier to get aroused.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this goes back though too to why do we know so little about women? Why is there a lack of research? Mm-hmm. It's our fault. Are we the ones signing up for MRI imaging during orgasm? No, very mm-hmm. hard to pull those studies off. We're kind of shy about that stuff. And there's so many other things too. Like we tend to laugh off stuff and giggle away things or normalize. Like I heard you just say, this is normal. It's normal in the sense of like the stats. The stats say that, if you're among women. However, is it acceptable? No. Is it changeable? Yes.
Yes.
I don't think Sheila's saying, actually, I'm going to let you clarify this, Sheila.
Yeah, no, that's great. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, I think what I want people to say is that there's so much shame. When you don't enjoy sex, you just think, I'm the only one. Because I look at all these movies, I look at all these TV shows, and everyone's having this great time. And all these women are just falling all over themselves to jump someone's bones. And what's wrong with me that I never want it? And you feel like I'm a freak. I'm broken. I'm never going to like sex. And I just want people to know that that's actually normal in the sense of common in the population.
Right.
You're not broken. What's really broken is the way that we've talked about sex, the way we've taught about sex, mm-hmm. the way we have normally seen sex from a male point of view, right? So sex begins when he enters her and it ends with his climax. Whereas, you know, the majority of women don't actually reach orgasm through intercourse. There's other routes that are much more common and are much easier. It doesn't mean that you can't, by the way. It's just like, let's just look at what actually works for women and not see us as like we are subpar. So he's the sexual one because it's easier for him. And I'm not the sexual one because I take longer. And no, that's just the way your body works. You know what else, ladies? We're capable of multiple orgasms. We have no refractory period. We can keep going. Like he is not the more sexual one.
Right.
It's just, you know, it's just that we're different. And so, you know, understanding that, hey, like, even if I haven't figured this out yet, even if sex isn't great for me yet, just have faith that you can get there.
Yeah.
You know, in a healthy relationship. Not if your relationship isn't healthy. Okay. If your relationship is not healthy, that's a huge red flag. And it is very difficult to have good sex when you are not safe. Okay. So if we're not emotionally, physically safe, whatever. So I'm not trying to
think about saying that,
but you know, in a healthy relationship, you can get there if we can just learn to get rid of these teachings that are in the back of our minds, whether we're Christian or not, a lot of this stuff is there, right? Mm-hmm. You got to have sex to keep him from straying. You know, if he's got a Cadillac in the garage, he's not going to want to go get a Volkswagen off the street. You know, like we say these things, right? You know, if he's having steak at home, he's not going to go looking for hamburger elsewhere. And so we think of sex as something we do to keep him from hurting us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As opposed to sex being a celebration of who we are together.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the way you said it earlier a couple of times, under threat. So if he's not going to have hamburger out there if there's steak at home, is under threat. It's a mm-hmm. threat. It's a threat mm-hmm. of your safety and the relationship and all this stuff. It's just...
Yeah. That makes sex about the threat and not about love and caring.
Which makes it into... Which makes the woman into an object.
Yeah.
Like literally the very opposite of... Probably the intended goal is actually the outcome. And that's one of the things that was really powerful when we went through the book was, wow, these things that, like they say, the purpose of this is to de-objectify women, but actually it's just objectifying women.
Yeah.
Inadvertently.
Yeah. The perfect example is there's a really famous book series in evangelicalism called Every Man's Battle, which talks about the battle that guys have with lust. And their solution to lust is to tell men to bounce your eyes and not look at women. So if you walk into an office, they warn you, usually there'll be a receptionist. She's usually a woman. So get in the habit when you walk into an office of immediately looking at the wall in case there's a woman there, because receptionists often bend over and then you could see their cleavage. Okay. Like it's just ridiculous. So anyway, you can just, for those of you listening, you cannot see my eye rolls, but whatever. So the idea is you bounce your eyes and you don't look at women in order not to lust after them. But right. by not looking at them, you're still treating them as solely a sexual object.
Right.
And it's I like to tell people, you know, from a religious point of view, for those of us who call ourselves Christians, Jesus did not refuse to look at women. Jesus chose to truly see women.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. Oh, that's so good. That is so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I asked my husband about that once.
He broke the law to communicate with women. Like he broke the law to see them as a person.
Yeah.
It's so good. I feel like, you know, now that we probably need to wrap this up, but like, I just think of the woman at the well, right? So that story is normally taught in church as a woman who was a dirtbag, sleazy woman that had a million husbands. What they don't understand actually is that women in that time period couldn't actually get a divorce.
Right.
So actually she was rejected 5 times by men. And so the whole thing, it wasn't her. Now we don't know all the circumstances. Maybe she had a lot of problems. I don't know, but it wasn't her that was doing the leaving and getting a whole bunch of men. That had nothing, that's not even culturally possible at that time frame. It's a different world then. And what Jesus was trying to do was actually connect with her as a person, despite the fact that she had been rejected 5 times. Because in that culture, when a woman's rejected, she truly has no worth in that culture. And he actually was the opposite of how it's almost always taught in church and Western culture, which is actually, even though you were rejected by 5 men and the whole world thinks that you're just a piece of property, I'm actually going to talk to you as a person. Yeah. And that is completely the opposite of the way that's normally taught. It's actually the opposite. It's a de-objectifying. And I think that, anyways, we could go on for like 7 or 8 hours, but I cut you off, Beth. You had something you were going to say about your amazing husband, Pete.
Well, I remember one time observing, we were in a drive-through. I was observing that my husband never looks at the person in a drive-through if they're a female. And I pointed it out to him. I was like, why aren't you making contact with this with these workers? He's like, that's just what I was taught. Mm-hmm. And I puzzled on that. And then when I read your book, I'm like, oh, there it is.
Exactly.
And you know, that is so sad because I'm being annoyed at him for him not looking at this other person.
Yeah.
And right. and he was actually trying to show me respect.
Yeah.
But
so crazy, right?
I was offended on their behalf, and it was just rude. right? It's rude to not make eye contact with somebody that is providing a service to you, that is you know, the receptionist or the worker. And my son does this now because that's what he's seen his dad do. And I'm like, look at them, look at them, look them in the eye, look at them, look at them. Like all the time, because it was so ingrained in him. And of course, it's weird, the nature nurture thing. Yeah. And my son the other day literally said, but mom, dad doesn't. I'm like, yeah, we're working on that. This practice. And he thought it was a good thing to do because he read that series.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I don't like that. Like,
yeah.
It's not like the person's going to come out of the Taco Bell window and jump your bones, as you said earlier.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. She doesn't want to sleep with you. She just wants to give you a taco. No, but like, but it treats women as sexual threats always. And we can't see women as anything else other than that. And then we wonder why women have body image issues. And we wonder why women have issues accepting our bodies and have all of these problems. And it's like, yeah, it's because of the things, the messaging that we've had from our culture, from our churches. And it can change. It can change when we start speaking up and we start saying, no, this isn't healthy. This is what it was ever intended.
Yeah.
I have a question. I know there are people who really struggle with the term mindfulness and even mind body. Like they see that as very new age and so, right. Can you just speak to that maybe in a little bit different terms or even address like why that's important scientifically? Maybe put it more in scientific or even scriptural terms to help those who hit that hurdle and can't get past it.
Yeah. Well, we are like this, the fact that belief in these negative teachings affects our bodies, affects vaginismus rates, shows us that we are integrated. What happens in our mind has an effect on our body. And vice versa, you know, what happens in our body is also going to affect our minds. And mindfulness is just the practice of making our minds centered on what our bodies are experiencing. Mm-hmm. And often what happens is our minds go everywhere but our bodies. Mm-hmm. We're really scared because we're so ashamed of our bodies. Our bodies have such fear and they're seen as threats. And they, every time we think about our body, we feel shame that we try not to pay attention to what our body is experiencing. Right. So like, and this shows up so classically with sex, right? So, you know, you're starting to kiss, whatever it is, and you start making grocery lists in your head, right? Like you think, is there milk in the fridge? Are we going to, can we have cereal for breakfast? Like if there's no milk, do we have stuff for toast? And so instead of concentrating on your body, you're thinking in your head and then you start to think, well, he's obviously not a very good lover because I'm not experiencing anything. It's like, so just learning how to say, hi, milk. I'm not interested in you right now. I'm going to put you up on a shelf or in the fridge back where you belong. And I am going to pay attention to what my body is feeling. And when you start to do that, you realize, oh, hold on a second. Something actually wants to be touched. Or, oh, wait a minute. Like this, something's actually feeling good. But you don't experience that if you're thinking about the milk. Right. If you're thinking about the milk, the milk is going to get all your attention and it doesn't matter how good he is at what he's doing. You're not going to feel it. So we women, and multiple studies have shown this in peer-reviewed journals, is that in order for a woman to feel good during sex, she needs to focus on her body. That's what mindfulness is. It's just thinking about your body and experiencing what your body is experiencing. So like paying attention, you know, asking yourself, what wants to be touched? What's feeling good right now? And ironically, exercise is what teaches us that. Like when you're doing yoga and you're holding a pose, okay? Mm-hmm. What that is doing is it's teaching you to recognize, okay, this muscle can go a little bit further. So as I exhale, I'm going to lean more into the stretch, you know, and I'm going to feel that stretch more. Because you're learning to pay attention to what your body is telling you. Right. And that's especially true with yoga, with stretching exercises. You know, you're learning when your body is saying just a little bit more, or you know what, not quite so much. Like you're learning to pay attention to those things. And those skills can actually go with you into the bedroom because a lot of us have never practiced that at all.
Wow.
We don't know how to listen to our bodies because we're ashamed of them. And so as you actually zero in on some of the fitness component, it actually helps you, you know, learn how to be there and just be present. So that's all mindfulness is. It's just being present, both with your body and your mind in the same place at the same time.
Wow.
But I'm not allowed to do that because I'm supposed to set my heart on things above, and I'm not of this world. I'm just a passing through. My treasures are laid out somewhere beyond the blue. That has been like, pleasure is a worldly thing and my body's a worldly thing. I need to be focused on heavenly things. To that, I would say to the people who are feeling that is, but God made your body. And God,
you got a clitoris, honey. You got a clitoris. The only purpose is pleasure.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? The penis can do many things.
Unless God was like, oh man, I can't believe I slipped up and made it that way. I think he had a plan in mind for that.
But also, you know, I also just think of how Jesus's miracles were so focused on the physical. They were so focused on the physical. The very first one, turning water into wine so that we could have pleasure at a celebration, right? You know, feeding people, healing people's physical infirmities. Like, the physical matters to God. He came as a physical person.
That's right.
The woman who bled and for all those years.
Yeah. Yeah. Our bodies matter. Our bodies matter. Yeah.
Man, that's so good. Man, that's so good. Sheila, thank you. This is amazing. I want to put up, let me put up this little banner. Okay. So if you're watching this, you can learn more about all of these resources at Sheila's website, baremarriage.com. We'll put it in the show notes as well. You can also find Sheila on Instagram. There's this book. Let me share my screen. Let me see. How do I do this? I go share screen, and then I click on this little thing.
Yeah, Instagram is SheilaGregoire.com. All one word. Mm-hmm.
So here's the website. You definitely need to check this out. Baremarriage.com. And then I pulled this up. There's all these amazing resources, e-courses, blog posts. So there's very rich with resources. So you guys want to check this out. And then also, did it switch over to the book?
Yes.
There you go.
So here's this book, The Great Sex Rescue, Lies You've Been Taught and How to Recover What God Intended. Super powerful. This is the one we talked about a lot, but Sheila, there's a new, so go buy this. It's, on audiobook if you like that. And it's also on Kindle and regular. But look at this, 2000 ratings. Look at this. There's a handful of people that don't know what they're talking about, but people love this. It's super powerful. So I would highly encourage you guys to get those resources, but there's a new book coming out, right? Sheila, you mentioned that a couple of times. When is that coming out? Where can they find out about that?
Yeah. April 18th. She Deserves Better.
That's perfect. Cause this is going to come out at the end of March.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. So right now you can get, if you buy it early, and I'll give you the link that you can share in the podcast notes, you'll be able to get our pre-order bonus, which is how to talk about modesty with your kids in a healthy way and what to do when your school or church or something has a dress code, which is ridiculous. So we got a handout that you can give to them about how to talk in a regular way. Yeah. And so I will.
So good.
So that is free if you pre-order the book.
Yeah. Great. That is awesome. All right. Well, so we'll put that in the show notes as well. So you should see it there in the show notes. But man, this is so good. I really encourage you guys. The little replacement. I should share that too. Anyways, the little replacement posts that you do on Instagram that Beth was referencing, those are so fantastic.
And I actually have a book on that that's launching tomorrow. So it will have already launched. My Fixed It For You Volume 1 on 30 Fixed It For Yous with discussion
questions
and everything.
So, perfect. Yeah. We will put the Fixed It For You link in there as well. So super appreciate the time today, Sheila. This has been absolutely fantastic. You definitely don't want to miss. Go find those resources on Sheila's website, Instagram, and just find her. It's super important. And I think the message that is that I'm hearing is you actually matter. So no matter what the world's telling you, no matter what your past, no matter what shame you're feeling or whatever, like, you actually matter, and that is just kind of woven through. And it ties right into the fitness too, because a lot of times, women, actually everyone, are programmed that, hey, it doesn't really matter. This is just a sacrifice. It doesn't really matter. And that's just not true. So you owe it to yourself to pay attention to this stuff. And Sheila's got some amazing resources. So go get those. And that's all I got. This is amazing. Thank you so much, Sheila, for spending time with us. Sheila's been awesome.
Thank you.
And we'll see you guys. We'll see you guys in the next one.
Bye, everyone. Thanks for listening to this episode of Fit to Be Radio. I hope you'll subscribe to our show and support us and our guests by clicking on the links we mentioned during the episode, which you'll find in the show notes wherever you're listening or watching. We'd also be so grateful, if this episode helped you in any way, if you take a moment to share it on social media. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Fit to Be Studio, on Facebook, Fit to Be Tummy Safe Fitness, and on Twitter at Fit to Be. And if you're looking for family-friendly, affordable, tummy-safe workouts to do at home, start your membership today at fittobe.com. Thank you.